This message is brought to you by Alliance Bible Church, located in Mequon, Wisconsin. Our vision is to captivate generations with the satisfying gospel of Jesus Christ. For more information about Alliance Bible Church or other resources, please check out our website, myabc.church.
An invitation can be a flattering gift to receive. You think about invitations you receive throughout your lifetime, they can, depending on the invitation, be something that is flattering to you. I know I have been the recipient of those kinds of invitations. I have been invited to attend the Daytona 500 and to watch it from the Pierce Manufacturing Suite, where the food just keeps coming. I have been invited to speak at a couple of NFL chapels. I was able to speak to the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets. The Packers won both games, so you're welcome. I've been invited to play golf at Whistling Straits and other spectacular golf courses, and I've been invited to numerous exciting family events, weddings, anniversary parties, and so on. But of all the invitations that I have received throughout the years, none of them offer what Jesus' invitation to all of us in Matthew 11 offers. None of those offer what Jesus offers us in his invitation to us in Matthew 11. Let me read it. Matthew 11, starting in verse 28, Jesus says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." These verses contain a theme in Scripture that our vision is based on. That's the theme of rest. Captivating generations with the satisfying gospel of Jesus Christ is all about the theme of rest. And it's the heartbeat of Jesus' invitation to all of us in Matthew 11. This is the greatest invitation ever given. So we're going to look at it under three headings. We're going to look at who qualifies for it, what it entails, and how to obtain it. This rest that Jesus invites us to. Who qualifies for it? What it entails and how to obtain it. First, who qualifies for it? I don't think anyone would dispute the fact that we live in a time when most people are badly in need of rest. We have whole industries devoted to pandering to our need for it. And so we're invited to escape to many different places. Jamaica, Cancun, Hawaii. If you live in the Midwest, Wisconsin, apparently. No one would dispute the fact that these escapes are helpful. We do need rest. But sometimes after the escape, we discover we didn't do what we should have done while we were on the escape. And now that we're back at work, we're finding our need for rest still remains. Nor do churchgoers escape this problem of just plain getting worn out. Church life can be frenetic. I came across a poem that parodies "Mary Had a Little Lamb." It says, "Mary had a little lamb, 'twas given her to keep, but then it joined the local church and died for lack of sleep." Most of us need to slow down. But there is a rest underneath the rest you find in Cancun. That rest underneath the rest, that deep rest, is the topic of Jesus' invitation. He says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden." So who qualifies for this? Plain and simple. The invitation goes out to all who labor and are heavy laden. Well, now who is that? Who qualifies for this rest? Well, in the immediate context, it's really impossible not to think of the heavy burden the Pharisees placed on worshipers through their legalistic decrees. It was the religious system of that day, and Jesus repeatedly blames the Pharisees for making it much more difficult than it should be. Even people within the system, like one disenchanted rabbi back at that time, described it this way. He made up a little story about a neighbor woman, a widow. She had two daughters and a field and had to work the field in order to support her girls. And she went out and she began to plow the field, but then one representative of the law came along and said, "You have an ox hooked up with a donkey. That's illegal." And then she began to scatter seed in her field, but it wasn't pure seed because she was poor. And another law expert came and said, "You can only sow pure seed." So she couldn't sow the seed. Then by hook or crook, she finally got it sowed and began to harvest when another representative of the law came along and said, "Make sure on your small land that you leave the edges of the field unharvested for the poor." Then another came along while she was threshing the stalks of wheat and said, "Give me the eve of the offering, the first and second tithe." And then she said to herself, "I can't make any money being a farmer." So she sold her land and bought some sheep. And you guessed it. When the sheep produced, the firstborn went to the religious establishment. When she sheared the sheep, they wanted their cut of the fleece. And finally, the story ends with her in tears, giving up. Now, maybe that's a bit overdone, but it captures the gist. Within that system, people were just plain worn out. They were weary and heavy laden. And so Jesus invites them to come to him for something better. But notice in the context, there's nothing in Jesus' words that restrict our understanding of who is weary and burdened. Jesus is focused simply and plainly on the neediness of human beings. All human beings are burdened. And it seems Jesus is pointing out we are burdened because we are yoked to someone or something other than him. What sort of thing or person could we be yoked to that would cause us to be weary and burdened? There's a great scene in 1 Kings 18 that illustrates this. In one corner, you've got the prophet Elijah. In the other, you've got 450 prophets of Baal. A counterfeit God. Elijah has sacrificed a bull, put it on the altar, but told them not to light the fire. Instead, the 450 prophets of Baal call on Baal to start the fire. But no one answered. They did this from morning till noon. No answer. Elijah begins to taunt them. "Shout louder. Maybe he's deep in thought or busy or traveling or sleeping or relieving himself." So they shout louder, and they began to slash themselves with swords and spears until the blood flowed, and they kept this up until evening, but no response. The author of this book is deliberately setting up a contrast between the frenetic activity of the Baal prophets and Elijah. The prophets of Baal graphically show us what it looks like to be weary and heavy laden. They show us how we become weary and heavy laden by serving a counterfeit God. You see, counterfeit gods require strenuous dancing to please them. More activity, get louder, get livelier, work harder. A counterfeit God requires a frenetic pace, strenuous dancing. So in order to get into that right school, you've got to strenuously dance. In order to get the right job, you've got to strenuously dance. In order to get the right amount of money, you've got to strenuously dance. In order to be beautiful, use Zumba strenuously. You strenuously dance for your circle of friends so they'll like you, they'll accept you. Counterfeit gods require strenuous dancing to please them, and it just wears us out. But counterfeit gods don't stop there. They push you toward destruction. Counterfeit gods possess an insatiable appetite. They keep pushing for more. in their service of the idol Baal, how did that look? They literally slashed themselves. Our slashing is more metaphorical. When career is our God, we slash our time with our kids or our spouse, or we slash our bodies by overworking and not getting enough rest. To obtain that perfect figure, we slash our bodies through crash diets or obsessive workouts. When politics is our God, we slash people on the other side of the aisle. Online political punditry is one big slash fest. In fact, we slash anyone who doesn't value our counterfeit God as much as we do. In Jesus' words in Matthew 11, he doesn't say we're not already yoked to something. He seems to imply we are. We're already yoked to something. We're all strenuously dancing for someone or something. We're slashing ourselves for that someone or something, and the result is weariness. Can you relate? What is that in your life? You know, the steroids scandals in baseball a few years ago, I think, are a picture of this. You know, you've got these players who are working hard to play not just well, but whatever better than well is. I don't know, All-Stars or Hall of Fame, whatever. And so they dose themselves with steroids, and it may work for a while, at least while they're in the limelight, but follow their stories. They're hard to find after all of this. Their bodies are broken down. Their reputations ruined. What if they had been content with where they were, with being good? We're weary, we're heavy laden. Have you identified the counterfeit God whose yoke you're carrying? Second, what this rest entails. What is this rest that Jesus invites us to? Rest is such a rich theme throughout the scriptures. Its first appearance is in Genesis 2, verse 2. After God finishes creating, he rested. You ever wonder what that's about? The eternal God, I mean, the scriptures are clear. He doesn't grow weary. He doesn't grow faint. He doesn't get tired. Why is he resting? Well, he's not resting because he's tired. He's resting because he perfected what he set out to do. To rest is a statement of completion. Everything is as it should be. The work is done. That's what it means to rest. It's to take a step back and be able to say, everything is as it should be. And of course, at this time in Genesis 2, it was. Rest reemerges in the story of Noah, whose name means rest. When the floodwaters began to recede, the ark came to rest. God has enacted his judgment. The work is finished. The ark is at rest. Or to put it differently, maybe now things are as they should be. Of course, it comes with a caveat. In just one chapter, Noah gets drunk and brings embarrassment upon his family. But we're meant to see and experience through this story a type of rest, however imperfect it may have been. Evil has been wiped out. God is starting over with a new creation. Picture being one of Noah's family members. You aren't blind to what's transpired over the past several months. You know full well the catastrophe that has taken place. But there also must be some sort of peace about you. Why? Because you've been saved. Your family's been saved. The incredibly evil world you lived in has on some level been made new. You're experiencing rest. And how did that happen? What was your route to getting there? Simply trusting in God's mode of salvation. Rest is the contentment, the satisfaction, the peace, the okayness that your soul longs for. Rest is the longing that every one of us has to be able to stand back and say, everything is as it should be. Jeremiah Burroughs, writing some time ago, says Christian contentment is that sweet, inward, quiet, gracious frame of spirit which freely submits to and delights in God's wise and fatherly disposal in every condition. I don't know a lot about many of you, but I do know you have a deep longing to be able to say of your life and the world, everything is as it should be. I know you long for that. In other words, you long for rest. Not to take a nap, though I wouldn't mind that this afternoon. Would be able to take a step back in your life, marriage, or world and say, yes, everything is as it should be. You long for rest. It's a universal human longing. And Jesus is offering it. In 2005, Brittany Ruiz became an adult film actress. She was beautiful, insecure, abused, and unloved. The perfect credentials for someone aspiring to this kind of career. She started at 18 and hit the ground running in search of the love she lacked her entire life. She worked as many as 60 consecutive days, starring in more than 275 films over 7 years, winning a number of awards and receiving mountains of accolades. Producers coveted her, men worshiped her. She was not only loved, she had fans. Life was good, right? No. Like most stars in that industry, Ruiz became depressed. In her words, she turned into an emotionless rubber Barbie doll. To cope, she self-medicated with alcohol, cocaine, and heroin. She cut her wrists. She tried suicide multiple times. She wanted out of the film world she was in, but like most in the industry, had no idea how to leave. Until November of 2012. In the midst of an emotional breakdown, Ruiz met members of a Bible church who happened to do cold turkey evangelism outside a convention center in New Jersey. People from the church pleaded with her to choose Jesus over her adult film career. The penny dropped. Her heart melted. She quit dancing and slashing for a counterfeit God, and she ran to Jesus for rest. Maybe on some level you can relate to her. Jesus' invitation is for you. Come, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Third, how do we obtain it? How do we obtain this rest? The first thing Jesus offers the weary and burdened is very simple. The first thing he offers is me. He says, come to me. The first thing he offers the weary and burdened is himself. So what you need is not better advice or a more strategic to-do list. You need a person. What you need is an encounter with and a relationship with Jesus. Do you have that? Do you really have that? If you haven't come to Christ, you don't have this rest. Because you don't get this deep sense of rest, this contentment, this satisfaction, this okayness, this existential settledness any other way. Jesus says, I will give you rest. He alone has it. You won't find it in your career, in romance, in politics, in sports, in wealth, or beauty. They don't have the rest that Jesus is offering. This step in receiving this rest is simple, and yet so many will miss it. Come to Jesus. The second thing Jesus offers in order to obtain this rest is a different yoke. Now, after you read Jesus' words, he says, I will give you rest. Perhaps you expect to read something about a vacation destination, a new recliner, a relaxing massage, or a sleeping pill. You don't get any of that. Instead, what do you get? You get a work order. Take my yoke upon you. By the way, this is a human yoke, not a yoke used for oxen. There were human yokes in the day, right? Wooden frame placed on the shoulders, make the load easier to carry, evenly distributing weight, etc. It's an instrument for work. Rest is not laziness. Rest comes from working. Rest comes from laboring. Rest comes from learning obedience to Jesus. Jesus did not turn to the weary and the burdened and said, take my chair. Take my mattress. That's equipment for sitting and sleeping. There's no sitting, there's no sleeping. He said, take my yoke. You'll be working. You'll be walking. You'll be moving forward. You'll be carrying what I tell you to carry. Even your own cross. Life might be uncomfortable. It might be hard. It might be trying, but irony of ironies, walk my way, Jesus says, and you'll find rest. If you come to me, you'll find rest. The rest that comes with forgiveness, that comes with purposeful living, the rest that comes from working for me. In other words, Jesus is trying to get us to live in line with our telos. To live in line with our telos, this is something that Paul wrote about. What is a telos? Well, very simple. How do you know if a watch is a good watch? Alistair McIntyre was talking about this. Very good. Before you can discern whether or not a watch is good, you have to know what a watch is made for. What its purpose is, what its function is. Only if you know what something is made for can you know whether or not it's good. If you think a watch was made for pounding nails into wood and you use it that way, you'll conclude this is a terrible watch. If you use the watch for keeping track of time, you'll conclude it's a good watch. Your telos is your appointed function, your role, your purpose in life. So when Jesus turns to the weary and burdened and says, take my yoke upon you, he's saying, you've got one on now that is telling you watches are used for pounding in nails. I mean, think about it. Has sexual immorality brought you rest? Has partying every weekend brought you rest? Has that perfect girl or guy brought you rest? Has climbing the corporate ladder brought you rest? Has your education brought you rest? Has any of that stuff you keep buying, the house, the car, the vintage sports car, the vacation home, the home entertainment center, the hot tub, the box of Twinkies brought you rest? Has any of that really brought you rest? No. Why? You're trying to pound nails with a watch. Jesus says, come to me. My yoke will tell you watches are used for keeping track of time. Live my way, and you'll find rest. Some of you here desperately need this message. You're looking for contentment in all the wrong places, and you're wondering why it's not working. Jesus is calling. Come to him. Do business with him. Get serious about him. Do it today. Do this little thought experiment. Imagine Jesus is sitting next to you. And you turn to him and you ask him, hey, Jesus, how are things between the two of us? What's his answer to the question? But let's zoom out a bit. Our own state, Wisconsin, is weary and heavy laden. A recent study came out listing the top 50 most drunk counties in the country. 41 of the 50 are in Wisconsin. I chuckled too, and yet it is tragic. Are you paying attention to the sharply rising opioid crisis in our state? Counties around the state have declared fentanyl a community health crisis. The marriage, sex, and gender ethic of our day is in total and complete chaos. They're looking for rest in all the wrong places. Our vision of rest, of captivating generations with the satisfying gospel of Jesus Christ, so they don't have to go to alcohol or drugs or sex to find what they're looking for, isn't something to be realized within these walls only, but our community as well. Give this invitation to your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers. It's on the tip of your tongue. Go tell them. This vision is also the reason we're committed to seeing Jesus-obsessed churches multiply. This vision is behind Lakeside Alliance Church. We're 1 year away from birthing this church. And we're going to ramp up things as we speed up this adventure to the fall of 2023. One of the ways we're doing that is something we're calling 40 days of prayer for Lakeside. We want to share with you needs that you can pray for and ways that you can grow in your own personal prayer life. And to that end, we have created teaching videos on prayer that will be sent out digitally. We're offering a great resource called Praying the Bible. We've created prayer guides with themes for each week and prayer prompts for each of the 40 days of this journey. But we also want to pray together. So we've got a couple of events that we've planned. We're going to be doing a prayer walk in Port Washington on Saturday, October 1st, Upper Lake Park, 9:30 in the morning. We're going to be doing a prayer and praise night on Wednesday, October 19th, right here at the church. We want to bring all of us together on this journey, 40 days, all of us together. Stop by the table in the lobby. You're going to see folks there. They'll get you what you need. They'll answer your questions. We want us journeying together on this. Why pray? Well, one of our values is prayer. Our vision is captivating generations with the satisfying gospel of Jesus Christ, but there are certain things we need to embody if we're going to get traction in seeing that vision accomplished. And one of those is prayer. Prayer is ministry. Prayer isn't the pregame show. It's the game. It is itself ministry. It's not the thing you do before the ministry happens. It is ministry. People involved in church planting in other parts of the country that I talked to over the past couple of years said the same thing about church planting. They said the ones that were successful were the ones where they had a healthy approach to prayer before it got started. People need an encounter with Christ to find rest. Not an encounter with me or you. The Lord might use us as tools, as instruments, but that's all we'll ever be. Behind the 40 days of prayer is a desire for revival. To see the Port Washington area and beyond one for Christ. We want to see Southeast Wisconsin find rest. Ministry year to come, one we have in front of us, is high risk, it's high faith. But we serve a big God. So let's ask him for big things. Let's see what he does. So one more thing I want you to notice about Jesus' words, and I'll finish with this. I think there's a double entendre in his statement. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. The writer of Hebrews gives us yet another meaning to rest. The one we'll enjoy when we breathe our last. We sing it here. When I pass through death, as I enter rest. In an ultimate sense, death is God's way of getting the believer to answer Jesus' invitation to come to him. And when death does facilitate our coming to Christ for our ultimate rest, there's no doubt we will come with weariness and burdens, which will only serve the purpose of making our final rest so sweet. I love the picture of Revelation 21. It says that God will wipe every tear from your eyes. The imagery is poignant. It has us entering glory with the tears of our weariness and our burdens still upon our cheeks. And it's God's own hand who will reach down and wipe them away. As he invites us in to experience our ultimate rest, where we will truly stand back and say, yes, everything is as it should be. Let's pray. Lord, I pray for those here who are in need of hope. They need this reminder that one day, you, God, will wipe every tear from our faces. You will bid us to come and experience our perfect, unending rest. Oh, Lord, give us hope. But we also recognize, God, that there are so many in our world, in our country, in our state, in our local communities who don't have this rest, who are looking in all the wrong places to find it. Oh God, I pray that you would give them this invitation. Maybe it's through your people. May we be your mouthpiece to invite people to come to your son Jesus and find the rest that their souls long for. Lord, I pray for those here who may be stuck in this cycle of trying to find contentment in created things rather than the Creator. Oh, Lord, would you call to them? Would you place it on their hearts and their minds that what they're looking for is found in only one place, in only one person? God, I pray that you would give them the strength to answer the invitation that Jesus gives us. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. We ask this through the powerful and strong name of Jesus. Amen.